Southeast all of Turdville, Turd Ferguson here. This is the initial A2A broadcast for all of 2015. A2A, of course, the format by which all of you in Turdville get to correspond, interact, and ask questions of the movers and shakers in the Precious Metals Arena. And to kick off the year, why not have the biggest mover and shaker of all?
Really?
Like that? Yeah. God, I made myself cough.
Right.
Gotta watch out so I don't cough.
It's all good.
The biggest mover and shaker of all, Jim Comiskey. Jim, I count as a friend, though I couldn't blame him if he doesn't want to like not count me as one.
No, it's reciprocal.
Anyway,
it's reciprocal.
Jim is a 30 years as a commodities broker, Jim?
31 now.
31 years, which makes him all of 44, I think. And Jim has been, how he managed to still have a head of hair, I have no idea. But he's been a commodity broker for 31 years, is a generalist in that sense, and that he has all, he'll tell you his opinion on just about anything commodity
Absolutely.
Related. And that's what makes him so useful here in Turdville. He is currently employed by, what do we call it? Archer Financial Services. Jim, tell everybody a little bit how they can contact you, because I don't trade, as everybody knows, I just don't have the time to trade anymore. But those of you that are trading, you really should contact Jim and work with him. How does somebody get in touch with you, Jim, should they want to?
Yeah, you? That'd be awesome. I welcome all comers. I don't care the size of your account. All I care is that you come to me with a passion for the markets, which I have obviously had for numerous decades. My direct phone number, if you're in the States, you can call me toll-free at 888-935-7979. Outside the States, 312-242-7996. If you want to email me, just shoot me an email at jim.comiskey, that's C-O-M-I-S-K-E-Y, at archerfinancials.com. You can follow me at Twitter, on Twitter rather, at Army of Comiskey. Whoa. Or you can check out my YouTube rants, which I do. Just go on YouTube, type in Jim Comiskey Metals, and click on the Sort By tab, and you can get the most recent, what I call rants. But what I try and do is at least 3 to 4 days a week, give about a 15 to 20 minute market recap. It's all gratis. Basically it's my attempt to give back to you, to people. I've had a very successful career, and I don't think enough people in my business, Craig, are willing to basically allow people to look behind the curtains and they'll be very embarrassed and surprised what they see, but I'm the guy that is willing to do so. I enjoy it. Yes, it's a way of meeting new people and generating new accounts and hopefully growing new accounts and helping people through the day-to-day travails that these markets present to us, straight up. And again, I've been doing this since '83, Drexel, Burnham, and Lambert, and I won't give you my whole background, but trust me, I've been at the Board of Trade and the Chicago Merc since '83. So,
well, and like you said, the Twitter handle we'll put here in this podcast so that people can follow you easily in the YouTube page. And like you said, it's important to give back, especially for a guy who's been doing this for 31 years. And is,
with
your advancing age, you could just drop dead at a moment's notice. So,
hey, thanks, buddy. Happy New Year's to you too.
Well, you're still here. All right, my man, let's dive right in. The topic on everyone's mind these days is crude oil. What
Absolutely.
I mean, I call it once in a lifetime, but we did see a drop like this not too long ago, back in 2008, almost a similar, not quite yet all the way on the same percentage basis, but gosh darn,
right.
Getting there. Do you see prices headed lower, at least from a technical and then some of the supply demand fundamentals that you follow?
Yes. First of all, right, let's back up, because I'm not sure if everybody has been watching the crude. I mean, obviously it's hit mainstream media. The mainstream idiots are are even keying in on crude now. Excuse me. But crude, literally, since December, has dropped over 50%.
Yep.
That's absolutely incredible.
Right.
Now, I, like you, Craig, remember, you know, when crude actually spiked to $148 a barrel and then tanked to like $38, $35 a barrel.
Yeah.
But this move was far more dramatic and far quicker than virtually any move I've seen. This is like a generational type of move.
Yeah.
It really is. And essentially, well, first of all, just for your edification, Feb crude is at $47.91, down 72 cents. It pretty much started out in December. Well, you know, as a way to punish Vladimir Putin for, in essence, annexing Crimea.
Right.
Okay, Russia is so energy dependent. Every dollar south on the crude basically costs the Russians $1 billion a day.
Whoa.
And their economy cannot sustain this. No way. And then I'm thinking that, 33 Liberty, which is the Federal Reserve's trading address, don't anybody show up too quickly, in Lower Manhattan, the New York Fed, in conjunction with the Kuwaiti government and the Royal House of Saud, have engineered this move in order to punish Vlad. Okay.
Yeah.
And they've succeeded beyond their wildest dreams.
Right.
And now I think, it's taking on a life of its own, because you've got a situation now where the Sauds and the Kuwaitis are thinking, wow, we could take down Venezuela here. We could shut down North Dakota.
Yeah.
We could kill the Keystone Pipeline Project.
Yep.
And it's when a commodity, first of all, crude oil is the most widely consumed commodity on Earth. Okay, the current estimates are between 90 and 98 million barrels a day that the Earth consumes of crude oil. Okay, and in the face of, yes, the demand is still there to a very high degree, for the price of that commodity to drop 50%, you mean to tell me that's not manipulated?
Yeah.
There's not reasons behind that manipulation?
Right.
You know, and so what it's done is, in essence, and if you guys will follow me here, because, you know, ever since 73, okay, Kissinger, you know, Nixon ticks us off the gold standard 71, all of a sudden the market's puking out, dollar's getting crushed, and Kissinger actually went to the Sauds and said, hey, you price crude oil in dollars, quote unquote, petrodollars. You know, going forward, we will protect you militarily, and that's why the dollar is still the king. And, you know, that pact has been, you know, sacrosanct for decades.
Right.
And now it's almost like the gloves are coming off. Because at first, if you guys think about this, during the OPEC squeeze, it was due to a lack of supply on the market. Now, the OPEC squeeze is due to oversupply in the market to kill, you know, fledgling industries. I realized, you know, the North Dakota, the Bakken shale oil, you know, they've been up and running for about 10 years now, but they're still fledgling industries. And they got a hell of a lot of paper out there, bonds, that were predicated, okay, the commercial paper, predicated on crude oil being at like the $85 range.
Right, right.
Okay, but I'll get to that in a second. So I don't want to get too complex too quickly. But, you know, net effect here is that the dollar has benefited tremendously, and it's taking down, yes, the metals, it's taking down the grains, it's, you know, certainly taking down an awful lot of commodities that are priced in U.S. dollars. So
it's, and you know, I think where you're going is all of these derivatives that are based off of that, off of
correct.
These commodities. Again, yeah, I think what a lot of folks, I wrote about this again today, a lot of folks didn't really foresee was the rapid decline, devaluation of not only the yen, but now also the euro.
Oh, yeah.
And
oh, yeah.
That makes
exactly.
It go up, and then all of these dollar-based carry trades and derivative contracts are all being unwound.
Exactly.
And it really kind of, like you said, they got more than what they bargained for. They may have set out just to knock crude down 10 or 20%, but it seemed like once it as you said, took on a life of its own once it got down through about 90. And now we just kind of wait to see what the ripple effects are going to be.
Exactly. There's $90 billion worth of bonds that were floated in the last 3 years. Now, again, this is, use the term bonds kind of loosely. It's mostly like short-term commercial paper to finance these operations. They're daily.
Like the North Dakota stuff. And
exactly. Okay. Exactly. And these, and Moody's is basically warned, these, they're all speculative grade. Okay. And let's see. 87% of these bonds come due mid-year this year.
Oh, shit.
And they got to be rolled. Okay.
Yeah.
So, you know, we saw, I can't think of the name of the Wildcat, the driller, off the top of my head, but the first default occurred yesterday in North Dakota.
Huh.
Okay. So this is going to feed on itself more and more. I do think that crude will stabilize around the $40 level now that it's cracked 50. But it's not necessarily a good thing to have crude come fall this far this fast.
No.
And it has everything to do with all the ancillary industries, you know, that rely on these new technologies, these new fracking wells. You know, I'm not going to go down, you know, some kind of diverse path. Keep me focused here, Turk.
Well, let me kind of give you the sister trade to all of that, which we anybody that's ever been trading futures or commodities affectionately calls the Widowmaker. And
Natty Gas.
Natty, yeah, golly. ever since we flipped into meteorological winter back on the 1st of November, when one, again, this is what makes it the Widowmaker, when one would naturally assume the Natty would go up, the Natty has gone in the toy.
Exactly.
What do you see? I mean, is it headed down to 2? I mean, what do you see there?
Well, first of all, you know, to put it into terms, Natty right now is at 2-year lows.
Okay? Right.
It's at 2-year lows because you know, the supply is quite great.
Yeah, yeah.
Having said that, you know, the fact that you know, along with the fracking technology, you know, with this explosion of a new source or a new way to get crude out of the ground, also comes natural gas. Okay, and Natty is called the Widowmaker for a reason. First of all, it's not real heavily traded, and there's people, you know, there's powers that be out there, you know, that can really pound this market north or south at the click of a mouse. I personally do not trade the natural for that reason.
You'd rather drink the natural, actually. Get a case of Natural Light and watch.
Well, there you go. Give me $3 and I'll go buy a case of Natural Light. But what I've been trading a lot lately, though, Craig, if you don't mind me grabbing the reins quickly, I've been short out the ass, sorry, currencies for the last 4 weeks, 5 weeks. Okay. I've been short the Swissie. I've been short the British pound. I've been short the euro. I've been short the Australia.
Yeah.
Most notably Canada, because the Canadian, the number one export of Canada is, wait for it, crude oil. Okay, so I mean, what does that do to the value of the currency? And we've been doing quite well shorting the currencies.
I bet. Yeah.
And I think they're going to continue to sell off. Okay. But I do see, and my spidey sense is starting to tingle, that you know, we're putting in a short-term bottom anyway in the crude. In other words, we're putting in a short-term high in the dollar. In other words, we're putting in short-term lows in the various currencies that I just mentioned.
Yeah.
By the way, hey, trivia question for you.
Lay it on.
What was the number 2 best performing currency in 2014?
After the dollar?
Yes, sir.
I'm running them all through my
gold.
Head. Oh, well, God, I'm a dork.
It was.
Well, yeah,
gold,
no, I apologize. I got sucked right into your currency trap.
Yeah, okay. But here it is.
Yeah.
A lot of people, you know, from Helicopter Ben on down, Greenspan seems to finally be starting to get the program. But, okay, since the most gold held by any sovereign is the United States.
Allegedly.
It's far and above. Okay, so most gold transactions are priced in greenbacks. So everybody looks at the price in gold in dollars. What I want you to do is take a look at the price of gold in British pounds, in euro currency,
yen.
In rubles, in yen. The gold has soared, okay? The number two performing currency of 2014 was gold.
Yep.
Not in U.S. dollars, however. But if the U.S. dollar eventually gives up the goat and starts to sell off, and I view it as inevitable a year to a year and a half down the road, gold is going to soar in U.S. dollars.
Yeah.
Okay? I diverged once again. Go on. Get me back on the path.
Well, you tell you what, I'm going to dive right in. I've got questions stacking up here.
Go for it.
So I'm going to turn over to the listeners. Again, those of you listening at home can ask questions directly of, well, indirectly. You're going to ask them. They're going to come to me, and then I'm going to relay them on to Jim by putting text into the dialogue box on your screen. The first one comes from Gabe. Gabe typed in what looks like a term paper for a question.
Here we go.
I should have tried to make this a little more concise before I started reading. But anyway, it has to do with that omnibus bill that Congress stumbled around right before Christmas, you know, and they included all that derivative legislation, putting the liability of those derivatives on the back of the American taxpayer.
Sure.
Well, Gabe's question was, Zero Hedge recently reported that Citi mysteriously added $9 trillion in swaps in the third quarter, while the other big banks, the too big to fails, were actually getting out. And then here it was, Citi, who was lobbying so hard to make it get that legislation book. So Gabe's wondering, is it possible that this under-the-radar bipartisan piece of legislation is part of a bigger plan, that Citi is deliberately being used by the Treasury as part of a gambit to suppress oil prices? Yeah, there you go.
Interesting. And that's a really good question, Gabe. I fully realize, and I'm all over what Citi and their lobbyists engineered. And basically, the too big to fails became even too bigger to fail.
Well, and if you want to talk, cozy. I mean, everybody thinks of being cozy with the Treasury Department. But boy, Citi, you think back to Robert Rubin, or even Jamie Dimon was at Citibank before he went to JP Morgan.
Exactly. And there's a lot of other players there too. And remember Robert Rubin before he made his exit stage right? He was paid $150 million consultant fee, really, by Citibank.
That's him.
For what?
Yeah.
Sitting in on like five board meetings. Really? And that was in the Clinton era.
Do you like?
Yeah, no.
Is there some? Is there some smoke there? Is some fire where there's some smoke? Is Citi doing the dirty work?
Big time. But you see, their asses are covered. But you know, Gabe, your question is. It's really more like four or five. Let's go back to 2006. Okay, Ben Bernanke, Helicopter Ben, takes the reins of the New York Fed, or of the Federal Reserve, obviously. Okay, and he proceeds to ram through legislation in conjunction with two of my least favorite politicians in history. Barney Frank and Christopher Dodd.
Yep.
Who have since retired. Basically, the Fed now, since then, has paid primary dealers 0.25% on deposits held with the Fed. Okay, now let's flash forward to now. Okay, or whenever, 08 on. One of the reasons why, with the Fed's four QE operations plus Operation Twist plus TARP. Engineered by Hank Paulson, another Goldman Sachs boy, by the way.
Yep.
When banks can lend money, or borrow money rather, from the Federal Reserve for zero and park it with the Federal Reserve and receive 0.25, 25 basis points, risk-free trade, why would they feel compelled to even put it in the larger economy proper?
Right.
In other words, you know, people like me and you, okay,
Right.
The Muppets, this money is not in the economy. This $4 trillion expansion of the Fed's balance sheet is still with the Fed. And banks are you know, in street name, are making money hand over fist by not lending money to the general public
right.
or corporate America. So you hear all about this, oh, it's bigger, the economy is doing great, and really? Okay, let's talk about unemployment. Labor participation rate is the lowest level it's been since like the late 70s. Labor participation rate is the amount of people that the chefs at the Cookbook of the Month Club, otherwise known as the Labor Department, count as people that are eligible to work yet choose not to look for work. So the unemployment rate declines because the whole population of workable people, people that could be in the workforce, is declining. So now the unemployment rate declines and everything looks ducky because people are living on Obamacare and their SNAP cards, sitting on a bench drinking beer on their Obama phones, you know, talking on their Obama phones.
We'll get a dose tomorrow.
Well, exactly. So this is the stuff that mainstream media, A, doesn't have a clue about, and B, if they did, they wouldn't want to tell anybody about because it's so scandalous. It's the biggest transfer of wealth, Craig, in human history.
Very few people
realize what's been going on since basically 06, 08.
Right. Let me move on to the next question.
Yes, sir. Fire away. Abe, I hope I satisfied your question there, buddy. If I didn't, shoot me an email.
This one comes from Michael. He said, in a previous last time you and I spoke, you mentioned that you think traders are better off trading futures options versus the futures themselves. And he wants you to go back and please explain why you think that.
Okay. Give you a perfect example. Let me get my options board up here. One sec. Okay, while my options screen is loading, okay, I'll just say this, Michael. When you're trading options, okay, your risk is known to the penny.
Yeah, defined.
Okay, your reward potentially is, you know, quote unquote, unlimited. Okay, but now we know that, you know, the reward's not going to be unlimited, but if you catch a move, say, I've been trading a lot of these weekly S&P options. Okay, I'll give you a perfect example, and okay, I'm loaded up. All right, this morning, you know, I came in the office, the S&P was at like 2040 or so, you know, another, 20 points in the day, courtesy of, wait for it, 33 Liberty,
yep.
Yes, the New York Fed. Okay, and I promptly proceeded to buy some 20, hold on a sec, apologize for the silence, from some 2050 calls that expired tomorrow afternoon at 3 o'clock Central. And what did I pay? Let me get my calculator. Well, no, off the top of my head. I paid about five ticks. Okay, a tick in the S&P is $50.
Okay.
So I paid like between $250 and $300 for a lot.
An option that's
tomorrow.
Tomorrow.
Yes,
yeah.
Weekly options. See, okay, you know, I won't get too technical in terms of the Greeks, but the concept of theta is time value in an option. Now, if you only have 1 day, 2 days, really, because it was this morning, two trading days, in an option, 2 days of theta, the option's going to be cheap, okay, just for that reason, because you've only got 2 days before they expire. So I jumped on the 2050 calls at five ticks, sold them out this afternoon before I left the office at like 15 ticks, okay? So my risk in terms of the, say, you know, I put out $300 for customers, okay, and got out of them at 15 ticks, 50 buck multiplier, that's $750. So in other words, you know, basically we doubled our money in the space of a couple hours.
Right.
But if the market would have headed south, okay, if the S&P would have sold off because I had these 2050 calls, my customers would have lost would have been like between $250 and $300 per option contract they bought.
Right.
If we had bought futures, right, and the market headed south, okay, now the market could go, it could, the way the S&P is moving these days, and I'm just using the S&P as an example here, okay, same with currencies, same with energies, same with metals, you know, if the S&P would have tanked 25 points, okay, now think about that.
Yeah, right.
Okay, so... Right. So it's a $50 multiplier. If the S&P would have dropped 25 points, well, now I'm out $12.50 for every future. Whereas if I just bought this option for $250 to $300, that's all I can lose.
Yep, that's right.
It's a more conservative way to play the markets, if you will, to trade the markets.
I would imagine.
I hope I answered.
No, absolutely. It's absolutely right. It's absolutely right. And again, with the way, especially on that short-term stuff, you know, I just was writing today about, I mean, if you're not buying every single crazy big steep dip in the S&P, there's been six of them in the last year. I mean,
exactly.
If you just bought those dips, you'd make so much money. But at the same time, who wants to be long an E-mini S&P or something when you go out take a leak and come back and the thing's down 50 points, you know?
Exactly. And, you know, hey, permission to swear?
Okay, granted this time.
Granted this time. All right, okay. What we call those are fuck you moves.
Yeah, yeah.
In Chicago. We call it, well, everywhere.
Just to blow you out.
Those fuck you moves. Yep. Because if you're in a future, you're going to be, you're going to probably be, well, if, all right. My customers, if they're trading futures, you know, I'm going to say, okay, where's the stop? Where is your risk parameter? And you're going to willing to admit you're wrong, and you take $1,000, $2,000 loss on a trade. Okay, so these fuck you moves are when the market reverses, takes out stops, and then reverses again and goes the way you originally forecast.
Yeah.
And with an option, you can handle that move because all of a sudden your option looks worthless on these FU moves, and then 20 minutes later, you've tripled your money.
Right.
And there it is.
Right.
There it is.
So, but Jim, you're being – we're already almost a half hour into this. It's just amazing how time flies. And we all
–
the generosity of time. Let me move on to the next question. This is from Steven.
Yes, sir.
Wondering if you – Steven wants to know if you've got any thoughts about who's on the losing side of this oil trade. I mean, who's been long the whole time? You know, open interest.
Funds. Yeah.
Interest in crude has plummeted. So who's on the other side of? I mean, is it producers hedging? I mean, who is it that's just really taking the shorts?
Yeah. A lot of it is. Well, see, you're right about the open interest decline, Stephen. Okay, but that open interest decline basically comes. You know, it almost self emanates from. You know, I've been in dealing rooms the world over. Where the head trader will walk around and say, blow the hell out of these crude longs, blow the hell out of these yen longs, okay? And if a guy sitting at a screen ignores that head trader, well, he's not going to be working tomorrow morning.
Yeah.
All right. So yes, that's one of the reasons for that big open interest decline. Okay. But the real losers here are the producers. Okay. And basically countries that are excessively reliant on energy as an income, stream.
Right.
Even the Sauds this year had their biggest budget deficit in Saudi Arabian history. I mean, it wasn't much because it was like, I don't know, $15 billion. For the Sauds, that's nothing. They have $2 trillion in reserves sitting in the bank in gold, mostly. So they can handle this move, and they engineered this move because, and this is really important, guys, the cost of production for Saudi Arabian sweet light crude, which is what it's called, because it's very easily refined.
Right.
All right. So it's more valuable than, say, your Nigerian heavy or, you know, your Russian.
Yeah.
Right. It's easier to what we call crack. Turn into products, turn into unleaded gas, turn into kerosene, turn into jet fuel, turn into heating oil. So therefore, it's more valuable. But the cost of production for the Saudis is estimated, and it's a closely guarded secret, right? I'm no genius, right? but it's estimated between like $15 and $20 a barrel. Okay, a barrel. So the Sauds can handle this kind of move because they're still making money hand over fist, even though they predicated their 2015 budget on crude being at like 75. That's just a rounding error
right.
for them.
If I
Whereas Venezuela has run out of soap. The number seven producer and their cost of production is like $90.
A little higher. Let me go back to Stephen's question.
Sure.
If there's obviously a bunch of shorts that have made money in paper crude, who do you think the longs are that were on the opposite side of that trade?
The producers.
Okay, so they're
the producers. Your Exxons, your Shells. Just look at what has happened. Now, I used to be Series 7 registered. It kind of expired because I've exclusively focused on commodities now. In other words, I used to have my Series 7, and I could speak directly to stocks.
Right.
I can no longer do that. I want to just be open with that. But look at your Exxon Mobils. Look at your Shells. Look at what the stock of – those are the people that are suffering. And the layoffs are starting, and are going to get worse and worse and worse. The state of Texas is going to suffer dramatically.
Right.
Okay, because their budget is predicated on energy as well. So those are the losers, the producers, bottom line.
Okay. Well, all right, let me move on back to Michael for just a second, kind of a combo question. One, apparently he must have some brokers or something at Archer. He wants to know if you know anybody named Stephen Platt or Mike McElroy.
I sit across from Stevie Platt
and
Mike McElroy.
No.
By the way, Mike, do you realize Stephen Platt has like a beer belly the size of – bigger than Santa
Wisconsin.
Claus? I was going to say the size of Santa – oh, it's far bigger than Santa Claus. But they're both great guys. I love them like brothers.
All right.
I sit like literally 15 feet from them.
His follow-up to that was, he's curious if you have any opinion on Bitcoin.
Stay the fuck away from it.
All right. That's a good frank opinion.
You know what? I really shouldn't be that blunt with that assessment because I haven't
I understand. I mean, it's maybe not.
I like to stay outside the realm of normal fiat currencies, but I haven't studied Bitcoin well enough to really give you a solid opinion on it. All right, so I shouldn't have just jumped, pulled the gun out of the holster and said that.
No, I understand. I
don't know enough to know, okay?
I'm the same way. I just stick with more traditional stuff.
Fair enough.
Two more left. One from a follow-up from Stephen. Same Stephen before.
Okay.
I'm going to predicate this by giving my opinion. I mean, it certainly seems, given the announcement by the Swiss National Bank of their NERP, their negative interest rate policy, going into effect the same day as the next ECB meeting, it almost seems like a fait accompli that the ECB is going to start QE.
Boy, that rhymed. Dude.
With the world where it is and with sovereign yields at all-time lows, Steve's question is, I mean, is that what you think too? I mean, is this just a done deal?
Yes. In essence, the reason why the Swiss National Bank went to a NERP, a negative interest rate policy, was to prevent all the flow of, let's say, Russian oligarchs parking their money in Switzerland, okay? In other words, buying Swiss francs and driving the value of the Swissie up relative to other currencies, and kind of choking out a lot of Swiss exports because they're now that much more expensive. Okay, the Swiss, they wanted to try and stem that, ironically enough, that inflow of foreign reserves into the Swiss franc because they don't want the franc that strong. Okay, and it's basically almost like a trade issue.
Right, right.
And the Swiss they're quick to react, but you know what? There's something that's like separate yet related. Tuesday, for the first time ever, the U.S. and we'll talk bond yields here for a second because bonds need to be discussed in this discussion. Okay, the U.S. 10-year the German 10-year Bund and the Japanese 10-year number 10 traded below 2% for the first time in history. That is very significant. Look, go to Bloomberg, okay? Everybody that's listening that's interested, because the bond market, in other words, interest rates, which are nothing more than the cost of money, okay, are very, very strong and reliable leading indicators for economic activity. Now, there's a concept called the yield curve. All right, I won't spend too much time on it, but it's everything. It's the interest rate paid on, like, overnight money, like Fed fund money, all the way out to 30-year bonds. And when a curve goes flat in the sovereign, in any nation's paper debt, it means that the bond market is anticipating virtually zero growth going forward for many, many, many years. And that is a very frightening scenario. And how can you have the S&P, the NAS, the Russell, the Dow making all-time highs in the face of the bond market showing these yields?
Well, and Jim, what it just tells you the fallacy of this notion, you know, of the Fed jawboning, saying that they're going to raise short-term interest rates because they'll just flatten it in.
Yeah. Think about this, Turd. If the Fed raised rates, I mean, now that we're basically paying 25 to 30% of the U.S.
Well, that too, yeah.
In interest. At zero,
right.
Virtually.
Right.
I mean, my God, that would be the inflationary. That would really be, you know, the caps off the jar. We're going to get into a wage price spiral in inflation, and that's when the metals really take off, and that's when the greenback really gets smoked. So I think they're going to avoid it at all costs. One thing that I'd like to, you know, point out independently. Now, Charlie Evans, Chicago Fed president. He basically works a block from me, Chicago Fed.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. He says that it would be crazy for the Fed to be raising rates. It would be a catastrophe. Uber Dove, Charlie Evans, Charles Evans. And so what the Fed is doing is basically they're talking out of both sides of their mouth. They're trying to warn the market that, yes, we might be raising rates. And then along comes Evans, who, by the way, has rotated onto the table in 2015. He's now a voter. And his word carries more weight. And he says, no, we can't raise weights. And that's why the stock market's rallying like this. And that's a QE to infinity.
Yep.
We're all on the road to Tokyo.
I'm sorry. Go ahead. I didn't mean to cut you off.
No. In terms of deflation, very little growth, very little savings. Because, by the way, Japanese, for the first time in history, they recorded negative savings last year, but that's another story. But go ahead, Dirk.
As listener Mark points out, Abe, stunning victory in Japan. Certainly seems to be – these ideas, these Keynesian ideas, certainly have not been rejected yet. Lastly, from Robert, we got an international audience here. Robert wants to know if non-U.S. residents can open an account with you.
Yes.
Hey, there you go. How do they do that? They got
a
special
absolutely
or something.
There are certain you know varied exceptions to the rule there in terms of you know different countries, and you can kind of you know logic would dictate certain countries like Syria or Iran or right. Certain regions of Canada I have issues with, but I've learned how to deal with the regulatory people up there. Yeah, I can definitely work with you, Robert, if you're out of country. No question.
All right. Well, then now we proceed to the most fun part of the show, which, if you'll recall, we wrap up with something we call the Final Four, which is back to questions from yours truly. But they're just kind of four quick questions, usually can be answered with one or two words or sentences. Just kind of let people get to
fire away, buddy.
All right.
Fire away.
All right. What most folks don't realize is you're a lifelong Chicagoan and
yes, sir.
You're a graduate of the great Jesuit institution, DePaul University.
Do you realize DePaul is the largest Catholic university in the country? I didn't realize that.
I didn't realize that either.
I didn't either. But, you know, that's neither here nor there. I just read that.
The question recently. Is, who is Ray Meyer?
Ray Meyer was the I used to call him Uncle Ray. He was the original head coach of DePaul's basketball team, the Blue Demons. And he actually brought him to a couple Final Fours before he basically crapped out with Mark Aguirre against the St. John's Redbirds in like 82. And then his son Joey took over, and he's truly screwed up.
And just buried the program. That I would already give you credit for question 1A, which was who was Mark Aguirre. So nice job. You
okay.
Both. All right.
Thank you.
Currently in Chicago, I think it's like about 75 below zero with a wind chill.
Oh, dude, this really sucks. Yeah, it's bad.
It is a horrific place in the wintertime, and I would suggest nobody go there. However, the reason people actually live there is it's great fun in the summer.
It is.
It's a city of festivals. There's usually one every single weekend. Which is your favorite Chicago festival each summer, Jim?
The Chicago Blues Festival, Grant Park.
Uh-huh. When do they usually have that one?
Mid-July, when weather is perfect.
Yeah, they go down
there. Enough.
Knock back a few
beers. So you got to get your butt up here.
Yeah.
And I'll buy you that steak and you buy me the beer.
You can go down there and listen to music, knock back a few beers, and look at your reflection in the bean.
Yeah, right. There you go.
Funkier.
Exactly.
Here. All right. I have a mailed in. We're going to make it a final five. Just a quick one. Mailed in from Steven. Okay. He wants to know, what is your favorite bar in downtown Chicago?
Wow. Well, my old one used to be a bar called Jesse Livermore's, which was owned by three of the biggest locals in the Bond Pit in the 80s. I don't do a lot of bar drinking in the Loop these days, but I kind of like a place called Peggy Cannanan's. It's an Irish joint, obviously, right across the street from the Board of Trade. And you know what? I've been married 30 years, but it's okay to look at the menus, right? The waitresses are really cute. And the beer is really cold. But Peggy Cannanan's would be my choice.
That's the Daily Double right there. Okay.
There it is.
Is your good buddy Jay Cutler coming back next year for the Bears?
I hope not. He can take his, you know, reality princess, Kristen Cavallari, and just get the out of town.
All right, and lastly,
the guy's such a mope in his decision making capabilities.
Just the way he stands.
Okay, go ahead.
Just the way he stands there on the sideline just makes you wonder.
I know. It drives me crazy.
Lastly, and I've been concluding this with this question now for a couple of months. If I handed you $1,200 in cash at Peggy Cannanan's bar, besides buying the house around. You had to take that $1,200 and you could either buy 1 ounce of gold or about 75 ounces of silver with it. Which would you buy?
Silver.
There you go. Okay.
Silver. Okay. And in fact, before we kill the rant here, the podcast, which has been quite enjoyable, by the way.
Oh, gosh, thanks.
I'm really digging this. What I've been doing a lot lately, you guys, is I've been going to like coin shows. And I've been picking up like Morgan's, kind of the rarer dates, like the 1896 O's and Peace Dollars, you know, like the 1919s. And I've been buying a lot of, you know, people call them dirty silver, but you know what? I view them as works of art. And right now you can buy 100-year-old silver dollars that are very rare for like $100. And it's not only a numismatic value, but it's obviously a meltdown value.
Sure.
In addition to, you know, the stacking and the monster boxes and stuff like that. I would definitely buy silver.
Plus, it's a lot of fun to do.
It really is. Even the wife likes that stuff. Because let's face it, they are works of art. They're beautiful.
Absolutely.
Coins.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, my friend, tell everybody again. Give everybody your contact info in case they want to reach out to you in the frozen city of Chicago.
Yeah, right. Okay, if you want to email me, please, anywhere around the world, just bring it. I entertain all questions. I endeavor to answer all questions. Jim.Comiskey@archerfinancials.com, plural there, by the way. If you're in the States, call me toll-free, 888-935-7979. If you're outside the States, 312-242-7996. You want to follow me on Twitter, I'm at Army of Comiskey, okay? And if you want to follow my YouTube rants, and I also give you all the contact information again on YouTube, just go on YouTube, type in Jim Comiskey Metals, one word, go in sort by, and then just go most recent. And I endeavor to do like 3 or 4 20-minute rants, market wrap-ups every afternoon, just as an effort to kind of unite us against them, if you know what I mean. And you do know what I mean.
I do know what you mean.
It's all good.
My friend, thank you so much for all your time, and I want to wish you a great survivable 2015. I suspect we're going to have to do this again here before too long because events will be wrapping.
Hey, you know what, Turd? I'm all over it. You kind of facetiously said you regard me as a friend, but you know what? I regard you as a friend as well. Anytime you want to do this, I will carve the time and do this, depending, of course, on market conditions,
but it's
all good.
All right, my friend, I'll give you the rest of the day off. Thank you, and thanks, everybody.
All right, buddy.
And we'll do this again soon.
All right. Talk to you soon, huh, Craig?
You got it, my friend.
See you, buddy. Bye.